Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 452. And tonight, we're recapping Welcome to Night Vale number 265, Labyrinth HQ. We're also going to talk about the final episode of Season 3, Beastars, because I have some comments I need to make.
Yes, exactly. I was a little shocked to remember that Labyrinth HQ is the place where Steve Carlsberg is working at now. I'm glad that they drop that little information in there, because that's going to be kind of important, even though we don't actually see Steve the entire episode. But it starts out with Cecil is doing a mobile broadcasting this time because he's found out about Leonard Burton broadcasting on their frequency, and he's utterly appalled because, first of all, that's very rude to broadcast on a frequency that other people are using, and also somebody brought Leonard Burton back from the dead, and that's kind of disturbing.
Yes. Okay, so, but before he sort of gets into all of that, he's going to do a little bit of mobile radioing, and he goes into the headlines, starting with, we have a teeny tiny little infrastructure problem in Night Vale, and the problem is that Night Vale is very hard to find, leave, or enter, which is something everybody's kind of been taking for granted, but it's really not good for getting shipments of food and needed supplies in.
But it seems to me that this is a problem that would have existed for a long time, so I'm not sure why it's turned into a crisis now, but he did say that when they have managed to get shipments in, the shipments maybe disappear, or the truck drivers turn into a very old man or a baby, so there's some weird timey-wimey things going on.
Timey-wimey is exactly it, because, you know, of course, for a long time, nobody aged in Night Vale. I just feel like now that people are aging, time is moving the way it should. I think a lot of stuff is catching up to them that they've kind of gotten away with for a while.
Yeah, and speaking of catching up with them, the town founder, who, if you remember, hatched from her own statue in a previous episode, is running amok in the town and eating citizens. And they've done some polls, and people don't like that. And Republicans especially say that town founders should not be allowed to eat people in front of their own family, which, okay, that's fair.
Yes, it really is. But like many polls, I don't know that it's going to do much good.
No.
Okay. So Cecil is now outside of the Labyrinth HQ building. He walks inside. There's a very fancy foyer with all the nice, like, corporate pieces of art. And they're very much like any startup that you'd normally see, like a big wall of living cactus and all that kind of stuff. Only thing it doesn't have is it doesn't seem to have any doors to get into the rest of the building.
Yeah, and this building is off by its own. There isn't a whole lot out there, except I was kind of amused to hear that one of the businesses nearby is a pre-owned bathroom tile business. Ew.
Oh, gross. Gross. So Cecil looks around, still can't find any doors, except he sees a hole in the middle of all those cactuses on the wall, pushes his way inside, and whoever's, I'm sure, dispersion, I know they do a lot of the producing for it, whoever's doing the Foley work for it is making these funny little plinking noises as Cecil's making his way through the cacti.
Now, as Cecil's forcing his way through, he decides to do a word from the sponsors, and the sponsors today is Campbell's Soup, and while everybody is familiar with the red and white cans, they are completely rebranding now, and they are going to drop several thousand gallons of seawater on a Broadway production, and they're not going to tell us which one.
Nope, nope, nope. And it's just, that's how you make your name in this industry. That's how you change the paradigm, or whatever the heck it was they said. They're just going to dump water. And so they end with Campbell's Soup. Here goes. 3, 2, 1. Ah! Okay, so the room that Cecil has pushed his way into is a big cubicle farm. It's completely empty, but it's like recently empty. There's still hot coffee on the desk, and there's a chair that's slowly spinning like somebody just got out of it a second ago. It's very creepy.
Yeah, and there's a phone hanging down with a voice coming from the other side. Hello? And he's noticing on a big work board some notes of a planning session, and one of them was, what if we all jumped at the same time? And just random things like that.
Yeah, I like that there is one spot where it looks like somebody hastily scrawled a big paragraph and then they equally hastily wiped it off with their hand. And I like things like that. You're like, oh, I wonder what that was all about.
Now, there's a light that Cecil is seeing from the bottom of a wastebasket, and he looks into it, and there's a tile floor down below. So he crams him and his mobile recording equipment down through that. But before he reaches the tile, he decides to do another word from the dental underground.
Mm-hmm. And dental underground is basically reassuring everybody that they are absolutely not going to steal your children. They've done it before, but they're not going to do it to yours. But they point out that they're concerned about the kids' teeth because kids' teeth can rot. And the best thing to do would be to take all the teeth out and put them someplace safe where they won't rot. And that's why they've already done it. They did say that they wouldn't steal anybody's kids. They didn't say anything about the teeth, though.
So when Cecil finds himself in the room below the wastebasket, it's a bathroom, and it's like an endless row of bathroom stalls. So he picks a direction and starts walking, and he starts being able to hear something, and he realizes, I didn't identify this at first, but he's hearing Leonard Burton still giving his radio address. So he starts running. He sees that the sinks are all filthy, even though the bathroom, the toilets all seem to be clean. But as he's looking around, he sees there is one stall that's completely empty of even a toilet. It just has a hole in the floor and a ladder. So he starts climbing down.
Yes. And since he's going to have to put his equipment on his back, this is a really good time to take us to the weather. So we go to the weather. And I wrote down, it's a little folk, it's a little country, it's a little rock.
Yeah. It's a little Western. Definitely had that electric guitar going through. I really love the vocals, and yeah. I wish I had been able to write down some of the lyrics, because they were really kind of fun. I mean, I love that sort of thing where it's not just a repetitive rhyming structure. It's got alliteration going on and things like that. So yeah, that's going to be added to my playlist.
Yeah, it was What Really Matters by Ariel Silver, I think that is. Ariel Silver, yes. Yeah, I liked it. It was definitely a good one. We were listening to the episode at 1.25 speed, and we had to stop it to listen at regular speed, which we always do when we think the weather is cool.
So when Cecil gets to the bottom of the ladder, and he said he was must have been climbing for, 2.5 minutes, maybe a little extra for ad breaks, but he's down in this huge warehouse that is filled with wooden crates, and he can still hear Leonard somewhere, but he just can't tell where. So he starts opening some of the wooden crates.
Of course, out of one of them, a woman gets out of it and she says, oh, thank you. And then she just sort of walks off. He's like, okay.
And there's another one that he opens. It has a little toy train, and there's a note attached to it that said, cursed, do not play with this. It would be a very bad idea to say choo-choo anywhere near it, because that would be deadly. And as Cecil says that, he notices that the train is starting to light up inside, and he's like, oh, I probably shouldn't have read that out loud. I'm just going to go ahead and close this box. And then he walks away. So that could be a problem later. I don't know.
Probably. Obviously, these are the crates that the man who is not tall, the man who is not short, have been taking to places and burying them.
Yeah.
So we know it has something to do with that. He opens another one, which I got to tell you, after the last one, I've been like, I don't want to open any more crates. But he opens another one, and inside is like a hotel lobby that he can see from above. And as he climbs through it, gravity kind of shifts until he's standing upright in the lobby. And there's rows of doors. And he sees a door that says room 2A, and he opens it up.
And inside is Leonard Burton, who is still doing his radio show. And Cecil's like, you're Leonard. And Leonard's like, I guess I am. So he seems like the stuff that Leonard says is deeply upsetting, but Leonard himself doesn't seem to be all that fazed. But Leonard remembers dying, and it turns out, you know, he was actually surprised to hear from Cecil that he's in Labyrinth HQ, because apparently Leonard had been investigating Labyrinth HQ until they ran him over with a car.
Yeah, that's extremely upsetting. Also, they set him there to broadcast, and he asked Cecil, you know, how long have I been broadcasting? And Cecil says, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks. He's like, oh, because from my side, that seems to be 2,000 years. And I'm like, oh, God.
But he's glad that Cecil has opened the door and let him out, so he'll probably see him around somewhere, and then he leaves.
And that's it. Cecil's like, oh, I'm really glad that I found my old boss and was able to liberate him from this captivity, but I'm angry that they had captured him in the first place, and I'm also really concerned about Steve. And then he realizes he needs to get out of there, but the door leading back through the box that he had come through, that door has disappeared, so now he's got to find a different way to get out.
Yeah, so he says, "Good night, Night Vale. Oh dear, all the rest of the doors are gone." And then there goes the lights. Good night.
Oh, God. This was such, I don't know how you would describe this particular trope. It's something about just, you know, it's a Bree Williams collection of weirdness that I always love, but it's contained within a house, and it is not similar to Warehouse by the Sea. And yet, there is something similar about it, that kind of idea?
I don't know what it is, but that was the first thing I thought of as well. It's like, it's a weird story that's part of a larger arc, and yet it's a standalone kind of story that you could, like, pluck this out of this world and move it to another world, and you'd get a very similar feeling.
I would say that anybody who's watching Severance probably understands this. I have not watched the second season yet. I hear I really need to, but Severance is also, like, contained within a space where a vast amount of that space isn't really known. And it's just, you know, really weird things that you can find here and there. So, yeah, this makes me want to catch up on Severance for sure.
I just need to watch that period. I haven't even watched one episode. And I keep seeing the random things like our friend Vincent posting about Severance. Ah! Because apparently, I think the season finale of this latest season was a bit upsetting. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I think it'll definitely kick you in the feels. Yeah, I mentioned it to Hannah, and the thing is like a trigger warning, it starts out with a woman in a room and she is being held against her will and she has no idea where she is. And if you read Hannah's article where she talked about all the hallucinations that she had when she was in the ICU, that's a particularly not cool thing for her. So Hannah's probably not going to watch it for a little while, I don't think.
Yeah, it's the combination of like an ongoing threat coupled with the paranoia of everybody being out to get you. It's like, No bueno.
No. And we'll put a link to Hannah's. If you haven't read that article, it's awfully good, but it is really like, ooh, it's harrowing in places. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it'll give you a whole new idea when people say somebody's resting comfortably in the ICU. They might not be. No, they might not. Wow. Okay, so that is it for Night Vale. I really like that episode.
That's, I did too, yeah.
I'm going to go into one of my, I don't know, my top Night Vale. I'd say my top 10. That's like over 250 episodes, well past a top 10.
I think so, yeah. We'd probably have to be closer to a top 50 or something.
Fair. Okay, from there, we're going to talk about Beastars, because I have an issue with this episode of Beastars.
Yes, namely the fact that this is the last episode of season 3, and it ends on a cliffhanger.
I don't even know if you say it ends on a cliffhanger. It just fucking ends, you know? I was just like, it's just done. It just stops. I'm like, that's really...
Yeah,
I thought this was like the last episode ever.
Yeah, and I've been looking around, and apparently there is a second part of the third season, which I think some people have known since December, because they've been talking about how the second half of the season will be released in early 2025. So we don't know. It could come out any day now, but I don't think there's been anything concrete. But yeah, two parts of this season.
I think it's amazing how I got all the way to the end of the episode and didn't realize that there was no possible way in the next like 30 seconds that the episode was going to get wrapped up. I'm just sort of watching, and then it ends. I'm like, wait, what? What? Oh my God.
So, first half of the episode is all about Louis, who is trying to get in to see the Beastar to tell him about Kynes. Mm-hmm. And he just hasn't, I guess he hasn't had any luck actually getting an appointment. So he sneaks in. So he goes, I mean, what is it? How many floors are in the building that the Beast
is in? Oh, it was over 100.
Yeah, and
easily over 100.
And he realizes he can't use the elevator to get there without somebody seeing him. So he decides he's going to climb. And he's like less than a year out from getting a prosthetic leg attached. So yeah, that's pretty exhausting. And then he almost immediately gets caught.
Yeah, it didn't work at all. I'm like, you could have just saved yourself all of that and just taken the elevator.
But the problem is that he gets caught by a tiger security guard who takes him to an elevator to take him back down to the security desk. I don't know. But something. He's looking at the note that Louis had brought with him to give to the Beastar. And it says Kynes is like causing carnivore or devouring instance or something like that. And the guard says, oh, that's ridiculous. There's nothing two kinds. I just finished drinking some now. And you're like, oh, you have just a moment to say, oh, no. And then, yeah, he goes nuts.
Yeah. Now, one real quick thing, and I saw other people talking about this as well. I have no idea why this is a thing. It's just another thing where I do not always understand Japanese culture. But Louis, at one point, when he's trying to get into a room, he takes out his lockpicks. Mm-hmm. As he puts them to the doorknob gets pixelated out. Like,
yes.
Like a porno. And it was so odd. And I don't know if that's like, I mean, if it was like, I would say, suggestive of something. I don't know, either that or they don't want people knowing how to pick locks with a lockpick. I have no idea. That was odd.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, I guess they don't even want to give the appearance of teaching anybody what the proper method would be for using lockpicks whatsoever. But yeah, you're right, because it does, you see that and you think porn, but it's just like, yeah. It's a lock. Come on now.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he's in the elevator now with a tiger guard that is trying to eat him.
Yeah. So he's like just barely managing to keep the tiger guard from ripping him apart. I also want to point out that he has antlers again. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, he had lost his antlers, then he has them back, and then he popped one of them off to distract the guard. And I'm just like, I don't know what the disappearing rear paling antler thing is.
See, I think I know what that's about, because when we had that beautiful episode in season one where Haru was reminiscing about how she first met Louis, and he had just, his antlers had come out early and they were bleeding, and he wanted a place to hide out until he could get some like fake ones shipped to him. So I think that's what it is. I think, you know, okay. Because otherwise the deer would be like antlerless for a good portion of the year as the new one grow in. So they kind of, I guess they worked around that kind of continuity problem, be like, they could be fake. You don't know.
They could be fake. Okay, so anyway, he's fighting for his life in the elevator. It's all the A-Team animators here. You know, it looks really good. It's very intense. Yeah, I mean, you said that you think he's about to get killed. You know he's not going to get killed.
No.
It's Louis. But at the same time, all of a sudden, the elevator doors are ripped open, and it's the Beastar to the rescue!
Yay!
And it's so exciting.
Yeah, really, really good animation. And I think the only thing that had kept Louis from getting eaten was the fact that he managed to get his legs up, so the tiger was biting down and trying to chew through his prosthetic leg the entire time instead of his actual flesh.
Right. So, of course, Louis telling Beastar about kinds, and the Beastar is all, and you played spy to sneak in here and tell me that. But in the end, he does actually let Louis do the dramatic reveal to the crowd below.
Because the tiger gets loose and like drops down into this presentation of this, like, what is it, a sheep or a deer or some celebrity,
something,
whatever, and everybody's screaming, and they manage to get him wrestled to the ground. And the Beastar just kind of gives him the, well, I think you can take care of this. So Louis just marches down and gives this whole very dramatic presentation about the fact that Kynes is causing devouring incidents because it has chemicals that are affecting carnivores.
Right. I don't want to forget about the fact that we do actually have a moment where Bill the Tiger and the one llama girl, I can't remember her name.
Yeah, a sheep.
Yeah. They're talking to the president of the college, and they're talking about how they really need to work together in the drama club. That's the whole point and everything. And he's wanting to know why they're going to be doing Adler. I have it written down Aldler. He wants to know if they're going to be doing Adler the Reaper, and they're like, well, of course. I'm like, yeah, that does seem to be what they do every year. And they're thinking, the president is thinking, with all the devouring incidents, I don't know, sacrificing yourself for love to someone else might not be the right tone right now.
I thought that was a great scene there, because it's just like, it's not saying that love isn't important, but they were just talking about, yes, love is the most important thing, it's worth dying for. And the person in charge is like, do you really want to say that after members of your, you know, the drama club died? That seems awful.
Yeah. But he does actually entertain the idea that maybe they could do a new script. They could come together and that could be the thing they could make. And I'm like, yeah, actually, I agree.
Yeah, and they seem pretty enthusiastic about that. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes in the second half of season three, which we didn't know we were going to get until we saw the end of part one.
So we cut from Louis' dramatic reveal to the crowd to Legoshi, who is sitting on this cliff. He had talked to the sloth that had tattooed Melon, and I believe it was the sloth who told him about a place called the Reaper's Blood Drop, I think. And it's just these cliffs with a beautiful view. And so we get several scenes of him looking out there. but it cuts back and forth between that and a scene where Louis' father is dressing him down.
Because, and I don't know if we knew this or not, but Louis' fiance, her family is the company that makes Kynes. And now Louis has gotten up in front of everybody and involved himself in all of this. And it's probably going to cause an awful lot of trouble for everybody. And Louis is just wondering, like, do you want us to just ignore this, that this is happening? And his father says something about however many millions he paid to adopt him from the black market, to buy him from the black market, and then how much money, like a lot of money, that he paid for that prosthetic leg. So it's kind of like, you know, I just kind of remember a Calvin and Hobbes thing where Calvin was being snippy to his mom, and his mom like started talking about all the money that had been paid for raising him, and says, now what you want to ask yourself is, was all that money a gift or a loan? And that seems to be the tone that we're getting from Louis' dad.
Yeah, and he's just really digging into everything. He's talking about how Louis offered himself to a carnivore, which is going to look really bad for the horns conglomerate. And also his dad ends up asking him, are you actually interested in women or even just female deer? He knows all about the dinner date that he had where things did not go very well with his fiance.
No. And I do wonder that there doesn't ever seem to be any acknowledgement from Louis about the affair that he was having with Haru. So no. It's not a problem with herbivores. It's not a problem with women. And yet when he was unable to have sex with his fiance, it was because he was thinking about carnivores and with this idea that he was kind of like scolding himself for being a virgin. I'm like, Haru, but I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. I don't think Haru's even had a chance to talk to Louis since he disappeared when he went off to run the Shishigumi.
I don't think he has. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's all, because I don't even, whatever. there's also so much homoerotic subtext in this show. I mean, he could very well be just totally into Lagoshi. We just don't know.
We don't know.
Okay, so we're back to Louis looking at the ocean. He was wishing that Haru was there, but he's thinking that he'd probably also creep her out. And I'm like, that's a fair bet. Sometimes you do that, Lagoshi.
Yeah, and he's just sitting there thinking about Melon and how Melon is really all alone, and maybe he doesn't have anybody to share this kind of, you know, view with, to sit with at the sunset. And he's actually imagining Melon sitting next to him and, you know, looking up at it and maybe smiling, and all of a sudden, boom! Part of Lagoshi's ear gets shot off.
Yeah, and blood everywhere. And we see Melon, and of course, Lagoshi realizes that everything that's led up to this was a trap, because of course it was a trap. And Melon is just really, really being dramatic, and he's mocking the shit out of Lagoshi, because he knows what Lagoshi was thinking, and thinking, oh, we could bond together, we could, you know, really connect and everything, which Melon thinks is high fucking hilarious.
Yeah, and he's also got the Shishigumi with him to back him up. So it ends with Lagoshi tied to a chair with a rock tied to it, sitting on the edge of the cliff.
Yeah, and Lagoshi is asking, you know, why are you doing this? And Melon's like, it's fun. Sympathy is really, really boring, you know? And Melon's face was really well animated this whole time. It's just really very fluid and nicely done. But he tells Lagoshi what he really likes is a face filled with the fear of death. No matter the species, everyone makes the same face.
And I think he particularly likes that change in people's faces. I guess when they react to betrayal or when they realize that all hope is gone. And it's just, oh yeah, he's a sadist. And he was, everything that he said to the sloth that Lagoshi heard the sloth repeating was all fake, because he knew that that would be what would get Lagoshi to come after him, was his sympathy. So he was basically taking advantage of Lagoshi's best qualities.
Mm-hmm. So he ends up kicking Lagoshi, handcuffed to the chair, kicking him over the cliff. And I have in my notes, I hope that Lagoshi remembers what his seal friend taught him. But we cut from there before we see anything to Haru, who's in a class looking at pictures of Lagoshi on her phone and looking kind of bummed out.
And her friend comes over and is asking her about that. Like, he hasn't called you yet. You really need to break up with him. Like, giving her all the best girlfriend advice about, oh, you're too good for him.
Yeah. And we hear a little bit of the lecture that's going on. I heard a little bit this talking about that the concept of meat eaters basically only came about after the war, and that before that, carnivores were just known as quote-unquote living creatures. And the lecture's going on, and the lecturer at one point notices that Haru and her friend are not paying attention, and he calls out to them because he wants them to stop talking and pay attention.
Yep, and you see, I like how their ears both perked up at the same time, yeep, like that. But then you go to the lecturer, and of course, it's Melon who's wearing a mask, which, and that, I think that that's a really interesting thing to use, because I think a lot of people in Japan are much more comfortable with wearing masks all the time to avoid any kind, either flu season, COVID, you name it. It definitely seems to be more common there. So, of course, Melon would be able to take advantage of that so people wouldn't see that he's a gazelle with carnivore teeth.
Oh, man. And then the episode ends.
And then
my note says, wait, what? That's no way. That's the end. Holy crap.
Yep.
Darn it.
So we'll have to, we'll definitely be posting updates if we find out when the second half is going to be dropped. Or you could look it up yourself, because obviously we're not really up on this information.
Man, don't rely on us to tell you anything. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries.
Mm.
So I want to say we've got at least six photo galleries up right now. Several from me. We've got one from Lauren, one from Ariana, one from Jada and her friend. And I also put up a photo gallery of dogs of WonderCon, because there were so many good dogs.
So cute. Yes, I do love it. I think it's getting to be much more acceptable for people to be bringing their dogs to these events. I mean, everybody, the dogs all seem to be well-behaved at the big costume events. Now, seeing dogs in other areas, I'm not so convinced, because you see, I hear a lot of yappy dogs like trying to strangle themselves going after other dogs. So, you know, just like, please be aware of what your dogs are capable of and how well your dogs can or cannot handle public spaces.
Exactly. Now, all of these, apparently it's service animals are allowed at the convention. So it is not just people bringing in their pets, but the definition of service animals tends to be pretty wide, but yes, they were all very well behaved, and they were all cool, and nobody was barking at anybody else. They were all very good dogs.
And great pictures, too.
Oh, thanks. All that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So we actually have another episode of Star Trek to talk about, but we figured we didn't want to cram that in with both a Night Vale episode and our thoughts about the last episode of Beastars. So we'll definitely talk about that next week, and whatever other shiny thing distracts us. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
So Cecil's now outside the lab. Hang on, cat. Settle. Okay, so Cecil is now outside the Labyrinth HQ.
Oh, hold on a second. When you have your book in front of your face, it's muffling your voice there.
Sorry. It's probably muffling the voice to you, but it's not muffling into the thing.
Oh, okay.
So I think I might be okay.
Yeah, okay.
But it's probably a good thing to be aware of. So I'm just going to take a look here. And there's a chair that's kind of like spinning, like somebody got out up of it. Damn, I can't talk today.
because apparently Leonard had been investigating Leonard HQ until they ran him down.
You said Leonard. You said Leonard had been investigating Leonard HQ.
Oh, sorry, I'm sorry.
But it cuts back and forth between that and to Lugosi's dad. Sorry, I have Lugosi's dad dressing him down. It's Louise's dad dressing him down. Damn it. No, actually, I'll start it over again.